Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, and on KWTF out of Bodega Bay, California. The show is sponsored by the worker owners at Firestorm Books and Cafe at 48 Commerce Street in downtown Asheville, North Carolina. Firestorm features organic coffee and milks, vegan sandwiches, homemade baked goods, radical literature, and a community calendar that can be found online at firestormcafe.com.
I was hoping to get this personal ad that he wrote, but it's back in Ohio and it hasn't been transcribed anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like, prisoners have advised me to put out a personal ad and try to find a girlfriend. I don't know why a girlfriend would want to date me. I'm in prison, but here goes. And it's like, man seeking woman, interests include helicopter piloting and use of AR-15. And like, you know, meet me in the courtyard, lay down suppressing fire. That would be great to have that read on the radio.
That was Ben Turk from Redbird Prison Abolition and Insurgent Theater, reading from a personal ad written by Sean Swain, who Ben does support work for. Sean is an anarchist prisoner serving 20 years to life in OSP in Youngstown, Ohio. As a brief intro, Sean and James Blackjack Chalalia have been railroaded by Ohio's disjustice system based on their interest in or affiliation with anarchism. The ODRC has accused Sean and Blackjack of being leaders of the nascent guerrilla and sabotage movement that's begun appearing in Ohio prisons called the Army of the 12 Monkeys, or A12M. Over the next hour, we'll be hearing excerpts of short conversations we had with Sean and Blackjack over this last week. And because Sean and Blackjack only get one 15-minute call a week, Ben Turk will be filling in some of the details on their situations throughout the episode. And thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me and for talking about Sean's situation.
Hell yeah.
My name's Sean Swain, and I'm talking to you from Ohio State Penitentiary now.
Can you give a little background about Sean Swain? What did Sean's life look like before he went to prison, and what did he get arrested and face trial for?
So Sean is in for murder. He's serving 20 to life. The guy who had been threatening him kicked in the door and attacked Sean, and Sean defended himself. He had a knife, and the guy ended up dying. Apparently, this is Sean's girlfriend's ex, who wanted to see his kids, and she told him no because he's abusive and had been threatening Sean and threatening her. Sounds like a real winner. So he was like, I'm going to come get the kids, and she was like, I'm not going to be here with the kids. I don't know if it was her house or Sean's house or where, but when the guy showed up, Sean was the only one there. And then the police came, obviously, and they took Sean, charged him with murder, and through the trial process, he pled self-defense and lost the first case because this guy, his name is Andrew Crouch, his aunt, I believe, is the clerk of courts. And so it's pretty clear that that is why Sean got the book thrown at him at that first trial. He appealed it and won an appeal, and then it went back to that same court where they improperly retried him. And so now he's somewhere in this legal limbo of trying to get out of that original conviction. Everything that happens with him is on a legal front seems to end up very bizarre and improper oftentimes. And I don't know. I mean, there is probably a couple of reasons for that. One is this particular court has it out for him. And second one is that he has also filed a number of lawsuits against prison guards and kind of has a reputation within legal circles that make judges and people like that not respect or...
sort of the authoritarian reaction by courts.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you will abide by this. You will respect my position. Like, I could see,
right,
Sean sort of rankling people on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and he's also really, does really thorough legal work. I mean, I don't know if he's good at it, but it seems like he knows what he's talking about. I'm not any kind of lawyer at all. So being a prisoner and a jailhouse lawyer who's actually good at those things is a real problem for the American legal system, because generally, if you're a jailhouse lawyer they'll just throw your stuff away, basically. But if you're a jailhouse lawyer who makes a good case and does follow up and fights continuously on the legal front, then you can't just brush somebody like that under the rug. He's ending up suing you for not following the way the law is supposed to be litigated or worked through or whatever. Yeah, I think he's basically like blacklisted by courts, especially in Erie County.
Sean, can you tell us what happened to you when you got accused of a 12M participation and why you think you were focused on?
The Army of the 12 Monkey stuff happened last September. And when they came to get me, they came to search my cell on the 19th of September, and they searched two other prisoners' cells also. They didn't find any 12 Monkey materials in my cell. They found nothing that was related to the Army of the 12 Monkeys at all. What they did find was an article about JPay.
JPay is a private corporation operating in 30 states, including Ohio, that facilitates money transfers as well as email and video conferencing services for a price. Sean was pissed because he became aware that with Ohio starting to use JPay services instead of the direct money transfers to prisoners via the prison as it already did, the state of Ohio also sold the personal information of family and friends and supporters of prisoners to JPay to be databased as, quote, approved, unquote, transferers, without their active consent.
It's posted at SeanSwain.org. In the article, I claimed that the JPay policy that was instituted by the prison complex, that it's illegal. And I claimed that the DRC director, Gary Moore, who is a former lobbyist for Corrections Corporation of America, he was their chief lobbyist, that he's in the pocket of these large corporations that profit off of imprisonment in the entire prison complex. I claimed he was a sock puppet of JPay. The only thing they confiscated from me was my article, and they took my typewriter and never gave that back. And out of the three of us, Dylan, who has since claimed that he is monkey number 9 of the Army of the 12 Monkeys, he was found with a great deal of 12 monkey materials in his cell. Blackjack was found ostensibly with a rap verse that was supposedly connected to the Army of the 12 Monkeys. I was found with none of the 12 monkey materials at all. I was the only one of the three of us that was taken into custody that day.
James Jalalia is one of the two prisoners implicated along with Sean. Here he talks about himself a bit and his experience of being accused of participation in the Army of the 12 Monkeys sabotage movement at the Mansfield Correctional Institute in Ohio, otherwise known as Mansi.
My name is James Jalalia, also known as Blackjack. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. Got sent to prison in 2007 for some robbery charges. I'm a rapper, been writing rhymes since I was a little kid. And in 2012, while I was in Mansfield, an organization calling themselves the Army of the 12 Monkeys started publishing flyers and pamphlets and whatnot, calling for, I guess you'd call it, warfare against the prison industrial complex from within. Different tactics were discussed inside these pamphlets explaining to prisoners how they can, fight back, I guess you'd say, against the system by doing little things that cost them a lot of money, like jamming staples in locks and taking nail clippers and cutting cables and cords for staff computers and phones and a whole bunch of different things like that. There's a lot of tactics in these manuals. And so the staff didn't like it, of course. And they did a lot of crazy stuff to everybody in prison for a little while. Lots of cell shakedowns and searches when you're on the yard. And they had a lot of violence too. They beat a lot of people up. Had paintball guns with pepper spray capsules inside of them or whatever. It was kind of crazy for a while. Well, when they shook my cell down, they were very thorough, went through every single piece of paper I had, and found in one of my notebooks a song that I had written a long time ago, like 2008, called Everyone Rise. And those lyrics were written in anger against prison. And inside the the song I was talking about, the rioting and getting out of prison. So they saw that and matched that up with a book that they had found in my cell called Errico Malatesta, His Life and Ideas, which somehow those two things tied me into the Army of the 12 Monkeys. I don't know how. And the next day they put me in a hole. And I sat in the hole for 11 months before they finally rode me out here to the Ohio State Penitentiary.
Ben, the support site and Sean both focus on the claim by the state that there's some sort of ideological link between the Army of the 12 Monkeys and Sean's writings and Blackjack's rap lyrics and reading choices. Sean and Blackjack are both tied in essentially for interest or adherence to anarchism. Can you talk about the validity or lack in the argument of the state on this?
The content of the Army of the 12 Monkeys manuals, which I've read, they are somehow linked on the internet anonymously, and they don't talk about anarchism at all. They don't align with Sean's beliefs, and they're mostly like practical guides. It's mostly like, this is how you can do this, and this is what happens if you get sent to the hole, and this is what you should do to get other prisoners involved in this kind of thing, and here's how to do a hunger strike, here's how to do, even like, here's how to ambush guards, here's how to sabotage this or that, here's how to, you know, organize, here's security culture for prisoners, and all of these different kinds of things, but they all, none of it uses an anarchist vocabulary, none of it uses Sean Swain's vocabulary, and it seems to be much more of like a sort of a Maoist approach to organizing or creating a guerrilla warfare sort of situation and ideology. Angela Hunzinger, the institutional investigator at Nancy, doesn't know ish about political ideologies. And so anything that's anti-prison, she just immediately assumed came from that anarchist, Sean Swain, who's at the prison and is, you know, an outspoken anarchist. And so Maoism and anarchism look close enough to each other for her. And that's why Sean was targeted. And Blackjack.
As far as you're aware, does Blackjack self-identify as an anarchist? Not that that should determine whether or not other folks decide to give him support. But I know he was reading a book about Malatesta and some of Malatesta's ideas. But is, as far as you're aware, is that something that Blackjack takes on personally?
I can't think of a specific place where he overtly stated, I am an anarchist, but he is down for revolution, is down for opposing these kinds of things, and from a much more like liberatory sort of anarchist angle than the Maoist line that comes from the Army of the 12 Monkeys.
Blackjack, where are you at with the charges for A12M?
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
Here's that guy. He does that. They got me in 4B status, which is maximum security. It's not super max, but, I mean, it might as well be. They think that I'm a part of it, and this is my my punishment, I guess, is being sent to OSP, Ohio State. So the RIB says I did it. No matter what I say, I've exhausted all my appeals. The state of Ohio is just going to go ahead and believe RIB's decision, and, you know, it's kangaroo court.
Ben, can you explain what the RIB is?
So the RIB is the Rules Infraction Board, and that's if you break a rule in a prison, you get a conduct report, and then you have a hearing before the RIB. And the hearing is you are in shackles standing on, like, some little footprints on a concrete floor, and there's, I think, a desk and a couple of prison officials who just tell you what they're going to do to you. And you're given some opportunity to retort or ask them questions or plead your case. But generally, that's a formality where people are like, you know, it doesn't matter whether I'm guilty or not. You're going to throw me in the hole. Oh, there we go, going into the hole. Like, that's just kind of, most of the time, prisoners know that that's a kangaroo court. You know, there's no presumption of innocence. There's none of the supposed protections that normal people have. Prisoners don't have those rights. And so the RIB has very low standards. Like, all there needs to be is some evidence But of course, when Sean or Blackjack go before this thing, they're like, oh, here's an opportunity to try to assert my rights. And so they do so enthusiastically.
Let's take a quick musical break, folks. KWTF and KXCF. This episode is Montage Conversation, one might say, about the case of anarchist prisoner Sean Swain in Ohio and radical prisoner James Blackjack Jalilia, who have been accused of leadership in the Army of the 12 Monkey Sabotage Movement in Ohio prisons. The voices you will be hearing me speaking with are Sean Swain, Blackjack, and Ben Turk. Ben does support work for Sean Swain, among other things. Here's Sean Swain's reaction to the court's hearing against him and the charges of membership in the A12M.
I find it dubious their claim that this was a 12-monkey investigation. This was specifically to target free speech. And after that, they admitted as much. You know, the first conduct report, they admitted that this was about ideology. And that's disturbing for me. Because prisons are kind of the state's petri dish. It's where they develop strategies for population control that they then apply to the larger population. When you look at something like Occupy and the police containment strategies and the infiltration that they used, where did those tactics come from? Well, those tactics were created in prisons. This is nothing new. This NSA program that Snowden's exposing now, if you really look at what's happening there, what the NSA is doing is simply expanding the prison mailroom to include the entire planet. So with me, when they're targeting ideology and the fact that I told the truth about the fascist police state, and they're silencing and doing
all is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
Yeah, in case you didn't know, I'm in prison. Targeting me and silencing me, I find disturbing because I also see that there's a developing trend. I don't know if you're familiar with the NATO 5 guys, but Mark Nyweem was recently also targeted simply by being an anarchist in prison. And they threw him in the hole, and they added more time onto his sentence that he has to serve. Daniel McGowan, who was an Earth Liberation Front prisoner, got out of prison and was on parole and had his parole revoked because he spoke out and told the truth about his time in prison. This whole ideology and telling the truth about power is now becoming somehow a legitimate reason to target prisoners, put them at higher security, extend prison sentences. For myself, now that I'm at, you know, Ohio's super-duper, uber-mega ultra-max, my chances of getting out of prison are just about zero unless I can challenge this in a court that doesn't care much more, possibly, than the prison authorities do. So what you have is an attack on free speech. My situation, because I told the truth about the DRC director, and then afterwards, supporters of mine helped get activist attorney Bob Fetrakis to take the case for me. And after that happened, the prison complex sort of panicked. They reversed the conduct reports that we had already been found guilty of and issued new conduct reports written by an attorney, ODRC counsel Trevor Clark. Instead of targeting my ideology, now it targets my speech to people who run SeanSwain.org.
Ben, can you talk really briefly about the relationship between SeanSwain.org and Sean himself?
he doesn't have control of the website. He creates most of the content on the website, but it's all up to us what gets posted, and we're responsible for it, I guess you would say. There's a handful of people, only one of whom I've actually met, who have access to the website and can post stuff. And we all just kind of make those decisions. It's pretty decentralized. And, you know, if you get something from Sean in the mail that you think is interesting, transcribe it, put it up. And it was basically everything he was doing to try to defend himself publicly was being used as evidence to prove that he was involved in the Army of the 12 Monkeys back the previous year, which is then just even more hilarious because then we talk about time travel and the actual, like, 12 Monkeys movie, which involves lots of time travel. Like, reality is stranger than fiction.
Here, Sean ties prison privatization in with his harassment by the warden of the Mansfield prison in Ohio.
Nothing I did was, you know, in violation of prison rules. But it doesn't matter if you're an anarchist and you have an ideology they don't like, and you start telling the truth about events that happened that they don't like. With regard to the Army of the 12 Monkeys, by the way, all of this kind of ties together in that Lake Erie, shortly after Mansfield had the outbreak, you know, the emergence of the Army of the 12 Monkeys, it next arose at Lake Erie, which is run by Corrections Corporation of America. It's now, I understand, spread to other prisons like Noble Correctional Institution, just had a recent outbreak of the Army of the 12 Monkeys. This is happening all over. And when I keep talking about this and exposing what's really happening, you know, it's got to get under the skin of Gary Moore, whose plan is to privatize all medium and minimum prisons, you know, after the 2014 election. And this giant privatization plan is going to be a big boondoggle for his corporate buddies. But he ruined the state's leverage position if, you know, the Army of the 12 Monkeys starts plantation riots at every single Ohio prison, because nobody's going to want to take it over. You know, nobody's going to want to take over plantations where the slaves are rioting. So this whole privatization plan now has to be based on putting a lid on the truth of what's really going on with the Army of the 12 Monkeys. And every time I open my big fat mouth, that makes it a little bit more difficult for them. So I'm cutting into their corporate profit margins just by talking to you right now.
Great. I'm glad to help.
I think Sean in some of his writings has said that he didn't really come into prison politicized, just kind of had the generalized, like, American, liberal, Midwestern perspective on the world. As far as you're aware, and I'd love to have this, like, to hear his words on it, but if we don't have the conversation before the time this show airs, what's your awareness of his political development?
He got screwed over by the system. He has said this pretty much clearly to me, so I feel pretty comfortable repeating it. You know, when he first went in on this charge, he was like, oh, the court made a mistake. I was, you know, doing self-defense. I shouldn't be here. I can fix this. And he appealed it. And then when the appeals went back to the original court and everything got fucked up with that, he was like, oh, wait, no, this isn't a mistake. I mean, and when he, you know, spent time in prison and talked to other prisoners and kind of recognized some of these things, he was like, oh, this isn't a mistake. This is how the system works. And it's terrible. And then he became more of a reformer and like, you know, we need to fix this system and it doesn't work right. And then by continuing to struggle and fight and have his rights trampled on because he's a prisoner who is standing up for his rights, and that's what happens when you do that, he realized that those rights are all bullish, and he started reading more and more anarchist stuff and kind of came to recognize that the system isn't broken. It is built this way on purpose and that it's functioning very efficiently to destroy people's lives, including his. That made him increasingly angry and radicalized and committed to continually educating himself. He's probably read more anarchist texts than anybody I know. And, yeah. And just like continually developing his understanding of the system and also continually resisting and fighting back. So on the 4th of July, a prisoner escaped from the prison. And then on the 5th of July, the guards were all very upset and confused and concerned, and the prison was on lockdown. So the people in the hole were not getting their meals, they were not getting their rec time, and they were all pissed off. And they were refusing to come out of their cells. And Sean and Blackjack cell was the first one that they were demanded to come out of, and they refused to come out. The cell extraction team came in to pull them out, and they fought back, and they fought back really ingeniously using the like materials that were available to them. And then Sean wrote an article called Tear Gas, Blood, and Vomit, which got posted to Anarchist News and has kind of been picked up. Other people really enjoy reading it. It's very well written and funny. But anyway, that incident, which he says that every other prisoner in the hole put up the same kind of fight. So that whole day, the cell extraction team was just pulling people out of their cells and pretty intense.
And just to kind of address it, another thing that the administration was pointing to is potentially tying Sean to the Army of 12 Monkeys is his tattoo, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he got that tattoo like long before the organizing.
Yeah. Long before any of this stuff happened. And he also has over a dozen other tattoos. He has a scar on the back of his hand, which is like the Fight Club scar. You know how in Fight Club people like would
the acid burn
and then put lye on it? Yeah, the acid burn. He has that. And that's another Brad Pitt movie. Like, you know, he likes things that come from pop culture and, you know, marks his body with them.
And it should be said that the other, at least Dylan, I'm not sure about the other folks, but Sean points out that Dylan doesn't have a 12 monkeys tattoo. And so like if it's a sign of membership in an organization, how does it come about that the only member who's come out and expressed that he is a member of this group doesn't have it, whereas someone who claims he isn't a member does have it?
It's clearly like, you know, Sean has that tattoo because he likes that movie and not because the members of the Army of the 12 Monkeys have that tattoo, because they don't.
Let's hear some music for a sec.
To turn your head away, 'cause what I'm gonna talk about, nobody, nobody, nobody wants to be without. Makes no difference who you are or what color you happen to be, as long
This is The Final Straw on Asheville FM, KWTF, KXCF. This episode is a montage conversation, of sorts, about the case of anarchist prisoner Sean Swain in Ohio and the case of radical prisoner James Blackjack Zelalia, who have been accused of leadership in the Army of the 12 Monkey Sabotage Movement in Ohio prisons. The voices you'll be hearing me speak with are Sean Swain, Blackjack, and Ben Turk. Ben does support work for Sean Swain, among other things. Ben? Sean's written a number of zines during his political development that have been distributed by South Chicago ABC and other Books to Prisoners projects. Can you talk about his writing?
I think his writing style is really interesting. He's a very good writer and uses humor a lot and uses personal anecdotes and stories and weaves them in really interesting ways. I think it's a very unique perspective. He's also written some fiction. There's a zine called The Last Act of the Circus Animals, which is sort of an allegory about resisting prisons. And he's working on another piece now that is like sort of a gonzo road story fiction, reminiscent of Hunter S. Thompson, about some people who are trying to gold digging cannibals, like, you know, in order to get crazy stories that's actually really quite funny and that I would like to try to publish at some point. But yeah, his political writing goes from rather serious pieces, like the piece about for the 20th anniversary of the Lucasville Uprising, where very honest, genuine, authentic, talking about how the Lucasville Uprising changed prisons in Ohio in a permanent way, and how we're kind of living, and prisoners in Ohio are kind of living in the reality that was formed by the uprising. To pieces like Armchair Anarchist Sucks, where he talks about how people just sit on the internet and talk ish, and yeah, just completely flippant, joking pieces like that.
That piece in particular was a response to trolls on Anarchist News, right? And a troll is someone who, like you said, like sits on the internet and comments and usually derides whatever someone is writing about. But they were criticizing, I think, some of the writings that Sean had put up. And can you talk about that article?
Yeah, so I would, every time that anything developed with the Army of the 12 Monkeys stuff, I or other supporters would post it to the website and then repost it to Anarchist News. And if we spun it anarchist-y enough, it would actually go up on Anarchist News. And there would be consistently somebody who had beef with the fact that when Sean ran for governor of Ohio in 2010, he tried to seek endorsements from Castro and Chavez and other, like, socialist, revolutionary socialist figures. Probably because Sean thought that it would be really awesome and hilarious if he was running for governor of Ohio and his only endorsements were from, like, revolutionary communists from Latin America. And this dogmatic anarchist was like, that's not anarchist-y enough. And so we just, like, call Sean out for not really being an anarchist because he did this joke run for governor. And then I would print the comments, I would print the articles out of Anarchist News and send them to Sean. And so he wrote this piece kind of responding to those trolls, because he was kind of, you know, how trolls eventually annoy you enough that you write back.
That's how they get you.
And it's a, yeah. Except that I think Sean got them mostly through this, because this piece, Armchair Anarchist Suck, is he makes a lot of really funny digs, and he also explains why he ran for governor, why he's running for governor again, and what that does in an actual, like, substantive way within the prison.
Let's talk for a minute, since you brought it up, about his next run for governor. Sean Swain often uses humor to make his points in his writing and his activism. Can you talk about his platform as he runs for governor and talk about his candidacy for 2014?
He's running for governor again in 2014, and his platform is, I don't want to be Ohio's next governor, I want to be Ohio's last governor. And if elected, he will dissolve the state. So he is running for governor as an anarchist, which is obviously incredibly ironic and should be a joke that everybody gets, but some people apparently don't and think that he, like, actually wants to lead the state of Ohio or something like that. It's also additionally funny because he's running from prison, and it's absurd that he would ever possibly get elected. But there are a handful of people in Ohio who are excited enough about this that they're going to help. So the last time he ran for governor in 2010, like News of the Weird or something like that, wrote about it. And this time he has supporters on the ground who might actually do some kind of like theater and press release, press conference type events, and who knows what other kind of campaign work to make his run for governor more publicly impactful.
Well, sadly, I'm not in Ohio. Otherwise, I could consider voting for Sean Swain. But So Ohio.
He suggests if you don't live in Ohio, that you should migrate to Ohio and register to vote at least 6 months before November 2014 and vote for him.
Well, there we are.
Everybody, all the anarchists should come to Ohio just to get him elected.
Or whatever. I mean, you know, we could have a big have a big picnic or something.
Yeah, well, as well.
How did you all hear about Sean?
I first heard about Sean when he was up for parole, and the people who had been doing support for him contacted me because I was living in a collective house in Columbus and doing prisoner support with Redbird, which I think at that time we were still calling it Columbus ABC. And they were looking for somewhere that Sean could land if he was released but had to stay in Ohio, because his hope was that he would get paroled and would be able to go mow his parents' lawn in New Mexico. But it was possible that the prison was not going to allow that and would have to, that he would have to stay in Ohio, and so it would be more likely he would be paroled if he had a stable place that he could live somewhere in Ohio.
Here's Sean's own words about his parole.
I had 20 years in 2011. We hired an attorney, Andrea Reno, to represent me for a full board hearing, right? Now, the parole board has a whole bunch of different mechanisms, right? You go up for a local hearing first, and I appear before five people. And at the local hearing, they can either recommend me for a full board hearing or for a central office board review, or they can give me more time. They recommended me for a full board hearing. Now, at the full board hearing, I have a chance of getting a parole. Problem is, Gary Croft is the former chief inspector, and I was suing him at the time, and he was put onto the parole board a month before I went up, and I didn't know this. And after I was recommended for a full board hearing, and it's mandatory they give me one by their own rules, they decided not to give me one, ignore their own rules, and give me five more years. And my attorney, Andrea Reno, who has already been paid...
You have 10 seconds left on this call.
Didn't bother to challenge that.
And his supporters had left. They were living in Cleveland when they started working with him and created the website. And then they actually raised money and hired a lawyer to try to help represent him before the parole board, and took down his website and tried to, like, downplay his politics just to try to get him through this parole board hearing. And that ended up backfiring, or at least not working. And so they spent a couple $1,000s, and the parole board hiring this attorney, who kind of did her job up until the point where the parole board went ahead and had the hearing without informing her or Sean, flopped him, refused to give him parole. And then she said that she was going to continue to fight and work for him, and then didn't. That was all going on a few years ago, and so we got an application from Sean Swain to live at the Midden, which is a collective house and egalitarian community I was living in at the time. And I think it was one of the best applications from anybody to live there that we got at any point. And it's too bad that the prison wouldn't let him out. Otherwise, he could be living in an awesome egalitarian anarchist community in Columbus right now.
Sean, can you talk about the current state of your incarceration in terms of how much space you have, how much access to phones, how much human contact, etc.?
Oh, I get one phone call a week on the weekend. It's a 15-minute phone call. So they're going to hang up here in about 45 seconds, I think. Or it might be about a minute, but it's going to be not too long. I get an hour of recreation 5 days a week in a fiberglass cage. And I get a shower 5 days a week. And other than that, I'm in solitary confinement. At OSP, we get three meals a day, and we get visits to commissary about every 2 weeks.
Well, hopefully, if not before 2016, hopefully in 2016 when he's next up for parole.
Yeah, 2016 is when he's next up for parole. He has said that he's not going to go to those hearings anymore, that he's not going to have anything to do with the parole board, that it's totally corrupt and a waste of his time and his supporters' money. You know, people raised quite a bit of money to try to get him out, and that didn't work, and the lawyer won't give it back. So that sucks. Also, if this 12 Monkey stuff sticks and he stays at Supermax, he doesn't have much of a chance before the parole board. And so, yeah, he's hoping that things like the civil lawsuit and fighting his original conviction, those are the things that he imagines might get him out, that and, you know, a revolution where we burn all the prisons down and let everybody out.
Not in that order.
Are the only ways that, right, yes, the other order, are the only ways that he'll actually be free.
Here's Sean again on the danger of precedent for punishing prisoners for beliefs.
It's not just about me. For me, I mean, you know, I care about me. Don't get it twisted. I care about me. But this is also about, you know, the precedent that this sets. You know, the fascist police state is ruthless. Once they put their toe in the water and they find out they can do it once, they're going to do it again and again and again, you know. And then, you know, you have the thing where it now becomes the trend to start putting ideological threats at higher and higher security, which is a real problem, you know, with the whole evolution of Occupy and the way that the police state is really going after people of radical politics.
So, Ben, Sean's writings have made it outside of prison walls. Can you talk about what kind of work he does on the inside with fellow prisoners?
I don't know a lot. In the Armchair Anarchist Sucks thing, he talks about why when he ran for governor, the kind of the effect that had. And I'm just going to quote from that real quick. Other prisoners knew why it was funny. It made me a minor celebrity. Whereas before my campaign, I was that anarchist guy, and nobody quite understood what anarchy was. My campaign made prisoners curious, and before long, young black prisoners from inner city and from conflicting gang backgrounds were reading Berkman, Kropotkin, Proudhon, Stirner, Goldman, Bakunin, Parsons, and Duclair. They had a prison-wide revolution library. Some of them began a writing collective called The Conditions Factory, a quote from George Jackson, where the conditions for revolution are not present, they must be manufactured. None of those prisoners have gone back to sleep. None of them have resumed their assigned seats. And so by kind of being a very overt, almost proselytizing anarchist within prison, he's attracted a lot of negative attention from guards, but also a lot of interest from prisoners. And I've seen that as doing books to prisoners, packing books and zines and finding there are more and more people who are interested in and wanting to read about anarchist ideas and things like that. So as a spreader of ideas, I think Sean is a threat to the state of Ohio and the prison system, and that's why they've gone after him and accused him and put him into Supermax isolation as a member of a security threat group for being an anarchist and, you know, labeled him the leader of the Army of the 12 Monkeys.
Let's take a musical break, then back to the cases of Sean Swain, Blackjack, and the A12M. Blackjack, how did this A12M case impact your legal status within the prison and your opportunity to see parole?
I'm under the new law in Ohio, which was, it's not really new anymore, but that's what we call it. It went into effect in 98, I think. There is no more parole for anybody who gets convicted in Ohio. We have what's called post-release control, which it's basically the same thing as parole, but there is no more like you serve a certain amount of time and then you go see the parole board. No, now you serve your entire sentence and then you serve 5 years of post-release control after it. while, you know, with a parole officer. It's basically double jeopardy, but nobody's won any court cases on it. What we do have is Good Days, and based on your performance, like different vocational classes you could take, especially education, anything involved with education, you get a day off for every month that you do, right? And
yeah.
Anytime you get found guilty at RIB, you lose all those good days. Well, I was a tutor ever since I started the whole prison bit, pretty much almost the whole time. And being a tutor, helping guys get their GED, I got, you know, a day off for every month I was in. Well, the moment this happened, I lost all of them. So, yeah, my out date has automatically been...
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
Yeah, it sucks. But other than that, I don't know. Just being in maximum security kind of blows.
As Blackjack stated, his case is basically done and he's just stuck doing his time. But... he mentioned, like, yeah, he would take letters if people wrote letters, and he would write back and, like, that sort of stuff. But do you have ideas about how to offer support towards that prisoner?
I think he would really appreciate having a pen pal. I've been corresponding with Sean for a long time, and when they were cellies, I, you know, occasionally would write to Blackjack, but not nearly as much. I just don't have time because I also do support for Lucasville guys and all kinds of other things. And so he would really like to have an active pen pal, his people to write with, so that he's less kind of living vicariously through Sean, especially now that they're in separate cell blocks up at OSP. So yeah, he's struggling in isolation. He and Dylan are both also up at OSP. So writing to either of them, just, you know, hi, how's it going? This is me, this is my life, just so that they have some more connection to people who on the outside, because isolation is supposed to isolate you and break you down. And so just giving them more human interaction and connection is a way of resisting that.
Blackjack, do you want folks to get a hold of you and write you letters? And is there anything in terms of your legal status and you being punished for having a book on Errico Malatesta?
Isn't that crazy?
Speaking? Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, this guy's been dead for 100 years. And
apparently he started the 12 Monkeys. I don't know.
Books or pen pals or legal defense or anything?
I don't know. Yeah, sure. All of the above. If anybody wants to help out, thank you so much. If you want to write, I'll write right back. I don't want to ask anybody for anything, but sure, if you want to write, you can reach me at, you know, James Jalilia, and the name is ridiculous. It's DZELAJLIJA. I know it's a mouthful, and the number is 530144. That's my prison number, and then it's at the Ohio State Penitentiary. 878 Coitsville Hubbard Road. Coitsville is Coitsville - Hubbard, Hubbard Road in Youngstown, Ohio, 44505. If you want to write, great. I'll write you immediately.
Is there anyone on the outside that you want to send a message to? Like family or anything?
Sure. I don't know if anybody's going to be listening. This is, they might. Hi, Mom. I love you. Hi, Dad. I love you, too. And everybody else.
Blackjack, what's the next step to you getting out of maximum security? Is it just collecting, quote-unquote, good days, or what?
As far as I know, because all the appeals were exhausted, I just have to do this time productively. Getting the different educational courses that they offer and whatnot, and they gave me a what's it called, a Rule 17, which is a gang ordinance violation or whatever, because they found me guilty of being a part of the Army of the 12 Monkeys. They profiled me as a gang member, and by being profiled as a gang member, I guess when you get sent to 4B for it, you have to do a minimum of a year in 4B before you get dropped to 4A, and then you got to do a certain amount of time there, and then you get dropped again to 3B, which is where I was. Well, I was in 3A, but when I got found guilty. But 3 is
and
close security.
3B is a medium security?
So probably,
okay.
No, I was in close security. Medium is beneath that. So
okay.
That would take even longer. That's probably another couple more years. So, I don't know. I never had any legal counsel during all this. Like I said, Sean was my cellie, so I was learning as I went along with, you know, him in contact with his lawyer. But
yeah.
I never had any legal representative. So, I don't know.
Ben Turk again.
If Sean's civil suit succeeds, then I imagine it could apply or could be repeated with Blackjack. But
he's not looking to challenge the very basis of his imprisonment for one thing. So they're in like different circumstances, right?
Yeah, and he doesn't have the legal experience, the patience, and the kind of willingness to go through exhaustive, ridiculous legal processes, or the confidence that they will succeed that Sean has. I think Sean is willing to do them even without the confidence that they will succeed. I think other prisoners I do support work with, this question is really interesting, and everybody seems to take different. Well, there are a couple of different tactics. One is, yeah, you got to do every single legal fight you can. You got to file every grievance you can. You got to try to fight, and you got to do this and everything, and maybe something eventually will work, and you'll get some kind of improved conditions, so you got to do it. And other people are like, this is all bullish. I don't want to waste my time on it, you know? I mean, I know guys who are sentenced to death who just get sick when they look at their legal work and just have a really hard time being actively involved in process by which they are being slowly murdered by the state of Ohio. So Blackjack not trying to pursue the legal remedy to this, I don't think has to do with his like unwillingness to resist or, you know, with him being guilty or something like that. I think it has to do with him not wanting to waste his time with this completely bullish legal system.
Can you talk a little about what members of the listening audience might be able to help you with? Do you need legal aid or anything?
Oh yeah, there's a donate button that's on the SeanSwain.org site, and we could use the money. We could certainly use it. We've raised some funds, but unfortunately, you know, most people who are radical and militant also aren't very rich. So in order for me to be able to fight this and get free someday, and that is my goal, you know, we're going to need a lot of small donations. You know, everything counts. And that means I have to get word out. People have to know what's really happening here, you know.
Ben, what ideas do you have about helping Sean and Blackjack from the outside?
Sean is seemingly infinitely full of ideas of ways that people can get involved. And it's been impossible for me to keep up with him. And he's also done a pretty good job of coordinating. You know, I'm not very involved in the, like, campaign stuff. There are other people that he's talking with about that who are working on those things. And so I would recommend just writing in and being like, I think what you're doing is great. How can I help? How can I get involved? And he will come back with a variety of options for you, and you can find which one works best. You can also contact me, and I can repeat some of those options. But they are everything from trying to raise money for the legal fund to try and help do stuff around this campaign, doing press releases, especially if you're in Ohio, to helping transcribe and publish more of his writings, put out more zines by him and stuff like that, distributing the zines we already have from him within prisons and on the outside. Those are all ways to do things. Helping kind of build a better legal team so that instead of one overworked, practically pro bono lawyer trying to do this stuff, we can actually get more help putting together the civil lawsuit and working on the original conviction.
Ben, what kind of legal representation does Sean have right now?
Mm-hmm. Bob Fitrakis is an activist lawyer, a Green Party member. He's run for various local offices on the Green Party. He's also a professor. He's a very busy guy who does lots of stuff. He runs the Free Press, a local kind of progressive newspaper in Columbus. And he has offered to help Sean with his legal work and around the stuff. So we have an outside lawyer who is willing to help, but it's been a struggle to get enough time from Bob in order to make these things happen. And so we're continually raising money. If we can raise more money, then Bob will be able to give it more time and more attention, and we'll be able to actually get some things filed sooner rather than later. And yeah, so that's kind of the where things are at.
And Sean's got a couple of things going on right now, right?
Including he's got a lawsuit with the Organization of American States. He's got a pending lawsuit that the American government has to respond to by December of this year concerning, denial of the existence of the state of Ohio.
Yes. So he has this really interesting zine. It's a much better place to get where he's coming from on this, called Ohio. It's a three-part zine where he talks about his personal relationship to the state of Ohio and the history of the state of Ohio, and how it is basically a legal fiction that exists in violation of treaties that even the white colonizers set up for themselves, and basically the genocidal history of Ohio. And on that basis, he makes the argument that the state of Ohio does not legally exist. And then he cites really interesting legal precedents for this. Yeah, so that scene, which is on SeanSwain.org, is probably a better place to get more information about the way that he's arguing the OAS thing. And I don't know why he's arguing it in the Organization of American States, probably because the U.S. government doesn't recognize it, and that's the only legal body that maybe can force the U.S. government to do something or to at least recognize the validity of a claim. I've heard of other prisoners, once they've exhausted all of their appeals within the U.S. legal system, including federal appeals and everything, they'll then start appealing to the OAS. Sean hasn't exhausted his state appeals, but is somehow, for some reason, working through the OAS on these other claims. I think if he succeeds in that lawsuit, he sets the legal precedent that the state of Ohio doesn't legitimately exist and should be dissolved. And that would apply probably to a number of other states, probably anything other than the original 13 colonies. And so I think it's more of a propaganda effort than a realistic effort to improve his situation.
I'm just imagining the people in the robes being well, I guess the OAS is right. We all have to go home and rethink this whole thing. Okay, open the prison doors. Damn it.
Right. Yeah, I think Sean fantasizes about that.
And he can go back and mow the lawn at his parents' house.
Right.
Well, thanks a lot, Ben Turk of Redbird Prison Abolition, for talking about the cases of Sean Swain and Blackjack and doing what you do.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for having me on it.
Have a good one. Thanks a lot for using your 15 minutes. Take care. Bye-bye.
For more info on Blackjack, including his contact info, as well as on Sean's case, writings, comic books, campaign, and contact, check out SeanSwain.org. For more info on prison abolition in Ohio, check out www.redbirdabolition.org. Asheville Free Media, AshevilleFM.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, and on KWTF out of Bodega Bay, California. The show is sponsored by the worker owners at Firestorm Books and Cafe at 48 Commerce Street in downtown Asheville, North Carolina. Firestorm features organic coffee and milks, vegan sandwiches, homemade baked goods, radical literature, and a community calendar that can be found online at firestormcafe.com.